From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Well, our connection this hour was made in 2021 when the city of Albany passed a piece of legislation known commonly as good cause eviction law. The law is meant to make sure that landlords have a justified reason for evicting a tenant and to prevent the abuse and possible homelessness of tenants. But the Albany law ran into a legal challenge, and ultimately the courts decided that only New York State could pass good cause eviction laws. Cities could not individually. So cities like Albany went back to the drawing board and pressed state lawmakers to address good cause eviction legislation. This year, the door has been pushed back open when two things happen. Well, first, New York City got its own package of good cause eviction laws, and the state greenlighted other cities to do the same, but only if they choose to opt in. Albany didn't wait. Their mayor signed legislation that officially established the city of Albany as the first municipality in the state to opt into good cause eviction law. In Albany, the law would state that a landlord can no longer increase rent more than 5% plus the consumer price index, or 10%, whichever is less, unless the landlord can prove that they need to increase it beyond that amount due to, say, they invested in a washer and dryer in the basement or something like that, some kind of repair or upgrade. But the law has plenty of opponents. Lisa Damiani is the executive director of the Western New York Property Owners Association. She told Capital Tonight, quote, "Most of our property owners, they're in the business of keeping people in their properties. That's what they want to do," end quote. And she objected to capping rent increases. She told Capital Tonight that apartment buildings are private property, and if landlords have the means to invest in their own properties, they should be able to, even if it means, or especially if it means, charging rents that match the costs of maintaining those properties. And that might be the most contentious part of this kind of legislation. Landlords have historically been able to take an existing property, remodel it, and then put it back on the market for a significant rent increase. Damiani says that's the free market working. Tenant rights organizations call that rent gouging, and that promotes instability and more homelessness. And some of the members of Rochester City Council want this city to pursue good cause eviction legislation and become city number 5 or 6, wherever we are on that list, because it's not just Albany. A number of other municipalities have now done that. They've opted in. This hour, we're exploring how it would work and why some are believing it is the right course of action. Let me welcome our guests from the Rochester City Council. Mary Lupien is back with us. Thank you for being here.
Good to be here.
Kim Smith as well from Rochester City Council. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Ryan Acuff is with us, education coordinator for the Citywide Tenant Union. Welcome back. Nice to have you here.
Great to be here.
Let me just start by saying that, Mary, you and I talked on this program, it's got to be a couple of years ago now, when, you know, the Albany case, among others, was winding its way through the courts. And your point then was, no matter what happened in that court decision, you did not want to give up on good cause eviction law. Some members of council have said, look, we're following the law here. Wasn't our place to do it. The court said the state has to do it. What is this recent opening of the door, so to speak, tell you? And what do you want to see happen about good cause?
I think it tells me that it's legislation that will help our tenants. And I think sometimes cities have to push the envelope. You know, what I learned in this position is that the law is not black and white. Things are not illegal or legal. Lawyers have different opinions on either side, as they did for this case, right? We had the Albany Deputy Corporation Counsel speak before Rochester City Council urging us to pass the legislation as they did. They had different interpretations of the law, and ultimately it comes down to a judge's decision. But you have to push it there. And I think Albany pushing it, passing it locally, challenging the interpretation that it wasn't permissible at the local level, caused us to now take it to the state, because we definitively found out we could not pass it at the local level. But at the time, we didn't really know that. Some of my colleagues weren't willing to take that risk. I'm glad Albany did, because now we have it at the state level and we're back again without that argument. Now we can opt in. We know we can opt in, and we have this legislation before us to consider.
So let me ask all three of you. I'll start with Mary. We'll go around the table. Why do you think Rochester needs this?
We have a housing crisis. We have a record number of holdover evictions in Rochester, which is the type of eviction that good cause would remedy, which means that you are not violating your lease. You're paying on time. It's just that you are being asked to leave through no fault of your own. And good cause eviction is going to allow our tenants to have more housing stability. And when I talk to people out in the community about what this law is attempting to fix, they're actually surprised that what landlords can do right now is legal. Whereas if you're a good tenant, you're paying your rent, they can ask you to leave once your lease is up for no reason for no reason. They don't need to give a reason. And so this is very important because the ending of a lease in order to remove a tenant or raising the rent amount to, $500, $600, $700, as we're hearing reports of, in order to force a family out, is the primary tool of displacement in neighborhoods where gentrification is changing the fabric of our neighborhoods and moving out tenants who are lower income and replacing them with tenants who are higher income, which also has the effect of changing the racial and cultural dynamic of neighborhoods. And we have to think, when we pass laws in Rochester, who are we passing them for? Are we passing them for the current residents or the future residents that don't live here yet that we're trying to attract? And I think that we need to pass laws for our residents because Rochester isn't just a physical location. It's the people who are here now that we have an obligation to protect.
Kim Smith, why does Rochester need this?
Well, in addition to everything that Councilmember Lupien just mentioned, I really do believe, Evan, that we are in a moment of bold opportunity. We are in a moment to address the issues of homelessness, the rising issue of evictions, of sanctions. We are in a moment of opportunity where we can address one of the root causes of public safety, right? We are also in a moment of bold opportunity when we look at our Rochester 2034 plan, and 33% of the residents who are impacted by the housing crisis, who are living at or below the poverty level, now can begin to feel some relief because prior to this legislation being introduced, there were no viable solutions for how we address and provide opportunities for that 33%. So again, it's a moment of bold opportunity, and I embrace it.
I'll ask Ryan Acuff the same question. Go ahead, Ryan.
I mean, I think we need to pass this because I think housing is a human right. It's a very, very basic need that all of us know, all of us have felt, and this is something that gets us one step closer to that. As Mary said, things are getting worse. You know, there's nothing... There's no law of nature that says evictions have to go up every year. There's no law of nature that says we have to have homeless as people under the street. We have to have people living under the bridge. We have to have shelters full every day. But we could actually turn things around. We can actually pass high impact legislation that keeps people in their homes, gives us all a sense of security that none of us should have to live with that existential insecurity that, like, I don't know how long I'm going to live here, or I could call code enforcement and get put out by my landlord, right? Nobody wants to live like that, right? All landlords have good cause eviction protection. All homeowners have good cause eviction protection. Nobody can be put out of their home, foreclosed on, without violating the mortgage. The bank can't foreclose. The city can't foreclose on a homeowner or landlord unless they violate an agreement with the taxes, right? So why would it be another class of people, tenants, renters, two-thirds of the city, not have the same protections as everybody else? I don't care how wealthy or not wealthy you are. I believe all of us should have basic protections to, all of our families, all of our individuals, all of our kids. We all need a place to live, and we need basic stability, and we need basic rules of the road, right? So and this is just one common sense thing. There's many more things we have to do with housing, but this is the floor. This isn't the ceiling. This is the beginning to begin to turn the tide back from so many years of displacement, so many years of gentrification, so many years. And this is a way to begin to turn it around, but we're going to have to build off it and pass other high impact legislation.
So in order to do this, Rochester City Council will need to vote to do this. And as you heard the guest mention, there are a number of municipalities in New York State this year with the chance to opt in to Good Cause who have done that, starting with Albany. Rochester would be, I think they mentioned, the sixth if it happens here. So five other cities have already done that. Now, part of why we are here today, I want to just make clear to listeners that you probably heard Mayor Malik Evans, along with the president of City Council, Miguel Melendez, Mitch Gruber, chair of finance. They were on this program in a number of weeks back now, talking about the city budget. And that is an opportunity we always afford the mayor. We always want to talk about how the mayor sees not only the current situation in Rochester, but how to fund different initiatives. And then what you have in Rochester right now, and maybe Kim and Mary will characterize it differently, but what certainly what it looks like is a 9-member council that is divided pretty firmly along 5-4 grounds, 5 members of council, and then 4 members of council, which include Mary Lupien, Kim Smith, Stanley Martin, Willie Lightfoot. And that, you know, if you want to call it a minority block of 4, does not have the votes to pass something like this unless you pull someone from the group of 5 that have voted together on a lot of things here. When Mary Lupien reached out after the mayor was on, it was like, well, can we come on and just talk about our thoughts about what the mayor had to say and about the budget? But clearly, you felt like you really wanted to focus on housing because I know that issue is perhaps number one for you. And there's this important moment where cities have to decide what they want to do. But without another member of council, first of all, am I incorrectly characterizing this? How would you describe it?
No, I think
is that fair?
You're characterizing it correctly.
Okay.
Firmly is a good way to put it.
Well, it's two firm blocks, yes. One with 5, one with 4.
Every now and then there's some crossover, but
okay.
For the most part.
So this is an issue. How are we going to get crossover?
Right. Well, I think as the minority block of 4, we have few tools at our disposal to influence the majority. And, you know, with the budget, we voted no. And I think there was an argument made either on your show or in an op-ed that we were irresponsible because voting no in the budget and not passing the budget would mean all these city services would stop. But voting no is a tool of the minority to be heard, to have our dissenting opinion put out there for consideration. If we were in the majority, we would have made amendments. We would have negotiated with the mayor to create a budget. Or as the state does, they create their own budget. The city council has a lot of power that we're leaving on the table. And were we in the majority, we would have used that power to create a budget that meets the needs of our people in this historic time of crisis in all of the areas. I can't tell you how many things that we've passed as a public health crisis, youth violence, housing, you know, racism. We're reaching the limit of all of our systems, and we needed a budget that would meet the gravity of the situation that we're in right now. The other tool is rallying and organizing with the community to put pressure on our colleagues. And we hope that they make, in the end, the decision that aligns with the will of the people. That route takes an incredible amount of work to change even just one person's mind.
Do you think you're going to get 5 votes on this?
I hope our colleagues listen to the will of the people.
Why are you so convinced it is the will of the people? And I'm not trying to be glib. Mm-hmm. I really want to understand because I would think they would say the same thing, that they talk to people all the time. The mayor, in the conversation we had, I don't know, 6 weeks ago, whatever it was, sort of implied that he thinks members of the minority block of council aren't really even reading legislation or aren't really kind of in touch with some of the issues on a deeper than just sort of a surface level.
That is an interesting take. That has not been my experience with my colleagues. We put a lot of time into thinking about legislation and thinking about how it could be made better, suggesting amendments to improve it. But again, because being in the minority, it takes a lot to persuade colleagues, and especially with our firm separation, there's a disincentive for them to want to work with us. But it takes little to no thought to vote yes on everything, which is what we see happening.
You don't think they just vote yes on everything, do you?
I would like to. I think the data supports what I'm saying.
Kim, how would you describe the situation on council, and do you think that there can be any agreement on this housing issue?
I sincerely wish there could be. I can tell you, so this is my first term, Councilmember Martin's first term, and actually I think this was our third budget. And so we stepped into that process very objectively, asking questions. What happens if we need to make amendments? What happens if we need to do this? None of those questions were effectively answered because the majority of council went into this budget with every intention on voting yes. And to answer Mary's question, if you want to know if the majority are voting yes on everything, look at the council member minutes. Probably more than 95% of legislation that comes to council gets voted through even when there are concerns. Very little legislation is even held in committee and given back to work with the administration with the opportunity to get it right. So yes, I do believe the majority stepped into this with every intention of voting yes, where the four of us, we were consistently chatting. Like, we thought the first day of the budget was exceptional, and we wanted to see more of that. But then when we had that meeting with the mayor to talk about a few things that we needed to be added that were important to equity, important to social justice, important to all of the bullets that they stated this budget was about. He came into that meeting aggressive, and the first thing he said to us is, regardless of this letter that you sent, I'm sure you're a no vote. And that is not where we were. So it made that meeting just that frustrating. We do not want this level of divide. It is ineffective. It is ineffective for us as a body.
Kim, again, who said he was sure you were a no vote? The mayor?
Yes.
And the mayor could say, look, he was right. You voted no.
They went in. I was not able to be at that meeting because we have this rule that you can't have more than three council members in a room without publicly noticing it. But I know that they went in there with a list of things that they needed in order to vote yes. So he said no, he dismissed it. And they were legitimate things that the community had been asking for. And I think to watch a single council meeting, you will see discussion consistently from Councilmember Martin, Councilmember Smith, and myself, asking questions, digging, challenging. You know, Ryan's at almost every council meeting and he can attest to it. We have an awful lot of power to shape the policy of this city and the lives of the people in it. And it is our responsibility to know the legislation that we're passing and to try to make it as good as possible for the people of the city.
Right. And can I ask Ryan as well, you know, we talk about the will of the people. You've heard members of council across the table from me say they believe that it is the will of the people to go in the direction of good cause. Why do you agree?
Yeah, I just want to say two things. So first, I just want to say one of the reasons I think we can do this because we already have a lot of buy-in. So I just want to make clear on June 4th, Intro 251 was introduced in the City Council that was co-introduced by all nine members of City Council. So there already is buy-in to pass good cause eviction protections in the City of Rochester. A piece of legislation by all nine council members already been introduced. I think what we want is it to be amended for it to be stronger. The second piece, as far as the will of the people, the council has already called four public hearings. Three of them have happened. And by my tally, over 80% of the speakers at those three public hearings spoke in favor of those who took a position. In addition, there's been polling in the region for years on this. And continually it comes out between 68 and 70% support in the entire region. I think it would poll even higher in the city. Good cause eviction protections is like minimum wage. It polls very high among Democrats, Republicans, independents, because it's basic common sense. It's only controversial among a certain elite class in the city. But among regular folks, this is not a controversial measure. Nobody believes that. No landlord wants to be put out of their home without cause. Nobody wants this, right? So it's just some people have more power than others. And our question is, should this even be something that anybody should have that much power over any other person, right? And I think this imbalance of power, and we see the dramatic consequences of it through homelessness, eviction, mental health, educational outcomes. This is something I think that we can do. This is actionable. 5 other cities have done it this summer. Rochester is saying they want to do something because it's been introduced. We just need to pass the strongest version like the other 5 cities have done, and we can really make a huge impact here.
All right. So I want to work through some of, I don't know if critique is the right word, but some of different ideas out there. Listeners, also, this is not going to be the only time we talk good cause this year. I promise you that. Kim and Mary and members of council from all sides will be invited in future programs to talk about where this is going, if it has enough momentum to get over the line, if there are enough votes. So we'll talk about it. This is kind of a first foray now that the door is back open for good cause eviction legislation in New York State. If you're just joining us, 5 other cities have passed that this year, and 2 members of council who are with us today are certainly hoping that Rochester will be the 6th, but they acknowledge that they may not have the votes. They're working on that. So something happened last week at the Democratic National Convention that I thought was interesting. There was one quick line in former President Barack Obama's speech that many people might have missed. But Obama's advisors have said that he is very serious about the housing issue. He's been reading a lot about housing. And he has come to believe that many Democratic-controlled cities have mismanaged the housing crisis. Obama believes the main issue is actually pretty simple. It's a supply issue. He says cities have made it too difficult to build new housing, too expensive, too many regulations, too much red tape. And I want to listen to a little bit of what he said at the convention first.
We can't just rely on the ideas of the past. We need to chart a new way forward to meet the challenges of today. And Kamala understands this. She knows, for example, that if we want to make it easier for more young people to buy a home, we need to build more units and clear away some of the outdated laws and regulations that made it harder to build homes for working people in this country. That is a priority, and she's put out a bold new plan to do just that.
All right, so he's talking about clearing away laws and regulations that prevent the housing stock from increasing. That was last Wednesday. The next day, Obama's chief speechwriter elaborated on Barack Obama's view of housing. I want to listen to a clip of Jon Favreau talking on the Bulwark podcast with Tim Miller. Favreau is not the actor named Jon Favreau, by the way. This Jon Favreau has been Obama's chief speechwriter for roughly 20 years, and he is in touch with Obama all the time. Here is what he said to Tim Miller about this issue of housing.
That whole section was him wanting to say, look, and he's done this in his speeches when he was a nominee, which is like, we can't just be tied to like old ideas of the past and also think that we like as Democrats and liberals and progressives, like we have a monopoly on all the ideas and that, you know, we've never done anything wrong. And he, you know, originally he went on this whole thing about like, it's a lot of Democratic cities that have zoning laws. And I was like, we're not writing zoning laws in the speech.
Oh, okay. Oh, that was a bad cut. Can I get the draft on that? Can we leak the draft on that to the newsletter for this week? Just so we know that he's out there.
He's there.
So I want to ask Rochester City Council members who are here. You know, you've got Barack Obama who says he's been studying up on this issue, and his conclusion is actually, it sounds a lot like some of the red state ideas that we've seen for a number of years, which is really what we see in Austin, Texas. We see in a number of Republican leaning states, which is this is a supply and demand issue. And we've made it way too hard to build. We've made it way too hard to expand housing stock. And that, you know, set everything else aside, that's what's going to solve a lot of this is get rid of these outdated laws and regulations, create more housing, increase supply, and then see what happens to affordability. What do you think of that, Mary Lupien?
I think he's absolutely right that we do need better zoning. We actually are in the middle of our zoning realignment project at the city, and the draft is not nearly as different than the old that I would have liked it to be. We need more inclusive zoning. We absolutely need more ability for people to build different types of housing. But the assertion that, well, this is the thing that's going to fix housing, that's an outdated idea. It's not one thing. One thing is not going to fix this. Good cause is not going to fix this. We need all of the things. And, you know, you were mentioning critiques of good cause. One of them is that, well, this will be so hard that landlords are going to sell and investors are going to come in and buy these properties and it's going to be like 2008. Investors look for communities with weak tenant protections. It would actually be better for, you know, keeping out investors for our tenants to be protected. And should their threats be carried out, if we had Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act, which is allowing tenants the right of first refusal should their landlord agree want to sell, that's a benefit to our residents. That opens up all of these houses and a pathway to home ownership for our people, coupled with our housing trust fund and financial support and technical support. So we have to think about this as a holistic picture of all of the different pieces that need to be in place for our housing to be stable and quality and affordable for our people.
Is it too hard to build new houses though right now?
Yes.
In New York State, in Rochester?
Yes.
So what needs to change for that to open up?
You know, we have several small scale developers that you know, they're looking to build you know, townhomes or small homes or just houses in distributed lots. And we have a number of things that make that very difficult. You know, I think that the trying to keep with the look and feel of the neighborhood, right? There's a guy who built a very futuristic looking, but, you know, green and cheap to build. He built one for himself and one side by side for a renter. But across the street were all of these old, like, canal houses that they built for the housing for those who are building the canal. And there are, like, you know, one story little block houses and they're falling down. And he had to push really hard because it wasn't with the character of the neighborhood. So we have these kind of rigid thoughts about what our housing should look like, or you know, we're another thing that's an issue is holding land where, you know, there's these developers that want to build on them, but the city's holding them for, like, maybe a church that wants to do a housing project. And, you know, the church is getting a heavy developer fee for doing this project. And so you start to question, like, what's the real reason behind some of these ideas? But the main reason is, you know, kind of NIMBYism, where there are some folks in the city that are living in really wonderful suburban park-like areas that don't really want to open up their neighborhoods for multifamily zoning or accessory dwelling units or, you know, other types of housing that would allow people with lower incomes to move in.
Kim Smith, what do you make of what former President Obama said there?
I think he's absolutely right, but I don't think it's a huge surprise that this is happening in Democratic states and cities because of the relationships that many of the Democratic elects have with big real estate. And so that is one of the primary reasons why we can't move. But quickly, in sum, and to piggyback off of what Councilmember Lupien was saying, I think we need to focus on three things. So housing supply, certainly. But even as we look at housing supply, we have to first look at creating stability of the housing that already exists. That is where good cause comes in. I think we need to look at home ownership, and I'm so happy that he mentioned these draconian policies and criterias, because when you have cities such as Rochester, which is like in the top five for being the poorest in the nation, it's time for us to reevaluate eligibility, right? And in terms of credit score, I mean, if you can pay rent, you can pay a mortgage, right? And then I think we need to look at housing types, not only making it affordable, but why are we not? We're looking at right now on council investing in tiny homes as a form of low barrier housing, but why are we not thinking about creating tiny home communities for those single folks living in poverty and want long-term stability, but not necessarily wanting to invest in a big house with a 30-year mortgage? So I think we need to get creative instead of looking at what already exists and building on that. What do we need to do for the people?
And I think maybe your third leg is tenant protections, because 65% of our city are renters. 65% of our city are living, you know, especially after your lease, your year lease is over. The majority of landlords keep their folks on month-to-month leases. So the majority of our people are 30 days away, 60, 90 days away from being told you got to find someplace else at a time where there is literally nothing available in affordable range for our people.
So in a moment, I want to return to some critiques of good cause to understand the position of these members of council, Mary Lupien, Kim Smith, with us this hour. Ryan Acuff is with us from the Citywide Tenant Union. And I want to just ask Ryan, so we understand how to think about housing. And this is not just sort of an intellectual exercise. I think it's important to understand tangibly what might be changing if these laws take effect. So you said the reason that you believe good cause is popular is because in your view, it's common sense that people, that nobody, a landlord wouldn't want someone to tell them they got to be out by X date without good reason, right? And so let me just back up because I'm reading the interview that Lisa Damiani gave with Capital Tonight. She's the executive director of the Western New York Property Owners Association. And she said, look, apartment buildings are private property. And at base level, people can do what they like with private property, which means they can open it up for rent. And if they decide, you know, I've rented for 10 years and, you know, I don't want to do that anymore. And I want to let the renters know that I'm going to be changing some things and give them a date. I'm not doing it maliciously, but it is my house. It is my property. It's my apartment building. It's what I'm going to do. Lisa Damiani is saying, in the way our society is set up, you ought to be able to do that. What I think you are saying is that with a lot of private property, you can do what you like. But housing should be viewed differently. That if you choose to purchase an apartment building, a house, and you're renting it out, it is not in the same category as having golf clubs in your basement. That there are restrictions to when and if you can tell someone they have to leave and what the conditions are. And that we can't just view it as private property like anything else. Is that how you see it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very problematic to see someone else's home as simply an investment and see someone else's home simply as an ATM that we're trying to get money out of it. I think it's very important that it's not just private property of I got a shed over there that I own. I don't want someone to tell me what to do with it. We're talking about where someone lives, right? So it's a huge misnomer that somehow private property means there's no protections and regulations or anybody. We just talked about zoning. Zoning affects private property. All rental housing has to comply with code enforcement. That's private property. There's this weird notion sometimes people try to bring up that if we have something and we call it private property, then you can do anything with it. That's totally, totally false. It's never been true in any country, including the United States. And this idea of the free market is also totally, totally false. Our housing is already subsidized by the federal government. The government is backing most mortgages of homeowners and the backing most mortgages of landlords to give them low interest loans through the Federal Housing Administration, through Fannie Mae, through Freddie Mac. For landlords, there's very specific tax benefits in the IRS code. And then just in the last couple of years, during the pandemic, the state gave over $2 billion of subsidies just for landlords. The city and the county gave $40-50 million. And what we're seeing is higher rents, more evictions. So this idea that there's this sacred free market, the subsidies are pouring in for landlords all the time. So all of a sudden we start talking about the free market and we're saying, well, if we're already pouring so much money in to benefit investors to buy up people's homes, the people that actually live there should have some protection. So there is no free market. The government's always intervening. Usually it's on behalf of the investors. So here we're talking about interventions that protect the residents, right? There's a big picture issue of how should we structure the whole housing system. Right now we're talking about, well, this should be something just to have basic stability. But I think there's a larger question is, should housing be treated as an investment, right? Because there's one thing to say, well, restaurants, right? That's one thing that maybe we can look at how that's done, but ultimately people can choose whether they want to go to a restaurant or not. Everybody has to live somewhere. And if it's a basic need, we should be treated as a basic need. And ironically, restaurants are regulated more than housing. They'll shut down restaurants under bad conditions, and they'll let landlords rent out places for decades under horrific conditions.
Let me just press on this point with all three of you, though, because I think Ryan is raising another very, I think, important point where there's obviously some disagreement. Mayor Malik Evans, I was on this program and I asked him, you know, I don't remember exactly how I phrased it, but I was curious about this moment. You know, you look at a citywide reassessment, you look at home ownership rates versus renting, and you look at, I mean, yeah, I'm even thinking about what Michelle Obama said at the convention last week when she used a phrase that was really powerful and new to me, certainly. She said that many people like her, had not benefited from the affirmative action of generational wealth. The affirmative action of generational wealth. There were people almost falling down in the aisles listening to that line. Like, that was an amazing hammer of a line, because generational wealth is often in the form of housing. And in this country, for decades, people of color were specifically denied that, intentionally denied that, or had it taken from them directly. And it didn't just happen in the American South. It happened in the American South, and then a lot of black families moved north to cities like Rochester in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, and it happened here too. So part of the question right now in front of us is, well, a lot of people do look at housing as an investment. A lot of people look at it as, I'm going to buy that first house, and maybe if I ever sell it, maybe it'll appreciate it. I can pass on to my family, et cetera. It'll be the best store of wealth that we have. And then I hear other people say, no, it needs to be a human right, and we need to stop looking at housing as an investment piece. And so I asked Mayor Malik Evans about that, and he essentially said that you can do both, that we do need to control prices, we need to make it more affordable, we need to help people buy more, but it should still be viewed as an important investment for people who want that, and that it can be both. Do you think it can be both, Ryan?
I think it can definitely be a lot more balanced. I think there's a question is if it's principally seen as an investment or principally seen as a place to live to meet basic needs. Right. And obviously it's way out of balance. I think there's a question is there any investment piece? Right. But I think the main thing is that it's principally seen as a place to live. And when someone's buying someone else's homes, that's a very concerning thing to see it principally as an investment. I think as far as one's own home, I think unfortunately at this moment, it is very necessary if people are able to own a home to have it as an investment to meet their needs, because intergenerational, passing down intergenerational wealth, unfortunately, is necessary for many people to get ahead because of the high cost of education, healthcare. So, but I think it would be less necessary in a system where basic needs are met, where the cost of education is skyrocketing, the cost of healthcare is skyrocketing. These are basic needs that the wealthiest country in the history of the world can easily provide for its residents. Much poorer country provides these needs to folks. So this need for, you know, I need to create wealth, pass it down, I think that becomes less necessary when the general costs of living and survival and thriving are that. So I think that's where it gets challenging, is that, you know, white folks have used predominantly, you know, the policies have favored many white families to build that wealth through housing, right, to meet these costs, right? So everybody should have those equal opportunities, right? Black, brown families to build that wealth. But ultimately, we shouldn't be in a situation where you have to pass down a bunch of wealth to survive and to thrive. And that's through a comprehensive change, not just on housing. Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying. I wonder if the members of council agree. Mary Lupien, I'll start with you. What do you think?
I think if every resident owned their house, we would have a stable housing market and we would have a thriving city. Investment creates the opportunity for instability. So it's fine to see your house as an investment, the house that you live in, because it is. Right? Instead of paying someone else for your rent, you're basically putting money in your own bank that you will cash out at some point in the future. But when it is someone else who sees your home as their business, that's very problematic. And you need no skill or qualifications to buy a house and become a landlord. To be responsible for someone's home and the stability of their entire life It is in our city's best interest to put housing in the hands of our people, and understanding that there are going to be some people that don't want to own their own homes. But that's where the government could be stepping in and building housing and having it be public housing. There's a lot of really amazing models all over the world for this. You know, it's not a local issue. We could fund our own public housing, but there's definite barriers at the federal level for creating more local public housing. But something like they have in Vienna, where everyone in public housing pays 30% of their income, whatever that income might be. You could be earning $100,000 a year or $100 a year, and everyone pays 30%. And that model is very successful.
Kim, how do you think we should look at housing? Can it still be an investment?
That question is so hard to answer, because when I go back to what you mentioned the mayor stated about us having both, I think that's the right answer, but it needs to be more than just words. We need balanced legislation and not work from a place of scarcity in order for all of these things to happen. So it should not be, even when you look at the good cause, it should not be good cause or real estate and landlords. Why can't we meet both needs? Right. And then when you look at generational wealth and housing being a point of generational wealth and pushing people to home ownership, my mind goes back to what is happening with the Asa family or the Adams family in Monroe County, where they believed in the American dream and building that generational wealth. They paid off their home with to pay their taxes, and now that home is being taken from them for $3,000. So none of this, none of what we are doing makes sense. The only thing that makes sense to me is if the city of Rochester collected all of its housing policies and legislations and did an honest critique and evaluation of that legislation in order to answer the question, are we being equal? Are we being effective? And have we achieved equity and social justice in these policies? So until that is happening, to me, everything is just, it's all just words. We need to see action. We can pass good cause and talk to the landlords and say, what were some of your pushbacks? And now how do we address them? It does not have to be either or, because really what we're saying is, do we want to listen to poor people or not?
So let me read an email from Christopher, who says, regarding the good cause legislation, is the proposed legislation available for the community to review? And then he says, I recently bought a rental property that's a complete wreck. It needs a new kitchen, bathroom, windows, flooring, HVAC. My plan is to terminate the current tenant's lease in order to vacate the property for 3 months in order to complete this work and then re-rent. Would the proposed legislation prevent me from doing this? I live in the city of Rochester, and this rental property is also in the city of Rochester.
So the question is, could you move someone out for renovation?
Yeah.
So I think if the tenant is complying with the lease and someone's not using it for personal use, then no, because it sounds like his plan is to re-rent it to somebody else. And the goal is to protect the tenants that are there and to renovate the property for the tenants that are there. Because the fact that the property is a wreck, that's no fault of the tenant, right? Unless they're making allegations that the tenant wrecked the property. If the tenant has caused damage to the property, that is a cause. But if the tenants are living there and somebody else ran the property down, that would not be a cause. The hope is that landlords would renovate buildings for the actual residents that are there, that the tenants that are there, I mean, I don't know the detailed situation, but I'm assuming they've been paying into this house, right? They've been paying rent for who knows how long. So the hope is that to protect the tenants so the landlords can renovate it, but that the tenants that have been living there and paying into it can benefit from the renovations.
So in other words, Christopher, if the tenant has not contributed to the house being a wreck, If the tenant has, Ryan is saying that falls under the good cause umbrella of what is a good cause to evict somebody. But if they have not, then no, I think.
And just a follow-up question, because what I didn't hear is, has the conversation happened with the tenant where they can reach some agreement of where that tenant can go while he is remodeling? And also, let me just throw out a kudos, because I have gone in to some of these places that are up for rent, and people are renting them as is. So the fact that this is a new landlord looking at what needs to be done to better the housing condition of his tenants, that deserves a kudos, especially based on what we are seeing now. But I think, again, the it just requires more questions, because has the conversation been had with the tenant? And I know if I am renting and my landlord wants me to move for 3 months to do these wonderful renovations, and then I come back, why wouldn't I want that?
Okay. Christopher, I hope that helps. And by the way, I think, Mary, you said the legislation is available for the public.
It is available on our website, cityofrochester.gov.
Okay. What is the timeline? If this is going to pass, what's the timeline look like here?
It was introduced last month. We did not vote on it this month. I think the plan may be to, after we've had, you know, all of our good cause eviction hearings, which the next one is this week.
Tomorrow.
Last one's tomorrow.
Yep. That we will be considering it next month. And I want to make the point that hasn't really, I think maybe Ryan made it before, is that the good cause being introduced by all nine of us, that will likely mean that it will pass. But the question on the table is, which version will pass? In the other five cities in New York State, the state of New York gave us some leeway on how we define what a small landlord, quote unquote, small landlord is, and the high income rents will be exempt. And so it's the percentage above, not the poverty level, it's percentage
of fair market rent.
Fair market rent, thank you. Mm-hmm. That would be excluded, and the number of units that a landlord would own in order to be considered a small landlord. Every other locality in New York that has passed it has passed the strongest version, and we introduced the weakest possible version. So I think at minimum we will get the weakest possible version, which currently excludes 80% of the people in eviction court right now for holdover evictions, which is what you get when you are evicted for no cause of your own. So thousands and thousands of Rochesterians are at stake because of two numbers in this bill. What we are asking for, which is what the other cities have done, is to pass the definition of a small landlord as one unit and 345% above fair market rent to be excluded. What we have is 10 units for a small landlord and 245% above fair market value. So it doesn't seem like a big difference, but it will affect the lives of so many of our residents.
Okay. Briefly here, the Western New York Property Owners Association said that they support instead the Housing Access Voucher Program. Instead of good cause.
We support the Housing Access Voucher Program too.
Okay.
But not instead of, because it's not just one thing that's going to fix this crisis.
So you say it's both and?
Both
yes,
and.
Yes, absolutely.
Both and. Okay. Well, there was one point of kind of agreement with the properties.
Well, the problem is, you know, is you can have a Housing Access Voucher and the landlord cannot take it. So, you know, it's great that we're supporting and subsidizing our renters, but it doesn't fundamentally change the availability of housing.
You want to add something there, Kim?
Yes, because I work full time for the organization who worked with Senator Kavanaugh for HAVP, the Housing Access Voucher Program. So we are all for that. But as they mentioned, this is different. And it would make sense that they are all for the Housing Access Voucher Program, because that's guaranteed money in their pocket. So that guaranteed money in the pocket for landlords, we want in turn for them to have housing stability for that guaranteed rent that they are being paid. So we need both. They go hand in hand. And the Housing Alliance for Housing Justice is actually pushing for both. That is what we call a comprehensive housing package.
All right, last 30 seconds. You heard your colleague, Kim, say that she does not believe, Mary Lupien does not believe, good cause eviction legislation will lead to more outside investors, out-of-state corporations, out-of-state faces buying up property, that it's not going to drive out the local owners. It's actually going to bring in more local owners because those out-of-state folks are kind of scared of the tougher eviction tenant protection laws. Do you see it that way?
I absolutely see it that way. I do think that it provides more opportunity for folks to buy locally because some of these big real estate or the folks with money are actually coming into the community. They're buying up the houses at rates that our local people cannot compete with.
So we will post as part of our show notes a link to information from the city of Rochester about what has been introduced here. Can we do that?
Yeah. I want to just add very briefly, one of the biggest criticisms is that leases, not renewing leases is being used because eviction court is too hard to get people out for valid reasons. But not renewing leases shouldn't be a workaround for a broken court system. Instead, we should be fixing the courts, and this legislation ensures that tenants can't be unfairly displaced.
Mary Lupien and Kim Smith from Rochester City Council, thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks to Ryan Acuff from the Citywide Tenant Union. Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
More connections coming up.